Siren Song, hosted by Dira Sujan.
As you may have already heard, this is Theme Week here at Radio Netherlands. All this coming week, our programs will be looking at multiculturalism in Holland. And launching the week today, Siren Song is turning to a community that's a curious hybrid of several cultures. Their food, their language, and their music are all an amalgamation of several very different influences. Have a listen to this music and see if you can pinpoint the community that my guest Siren will be talking about today. If you have a good ear for musical accents, you would have picked out strains of Caribbean reggae, Western pop, and Hindi movie songs. And the community that blends all of them together to create something completely unique is the Indian Surinamese community, which numbers some 200,000 people in the Netherlands. They call themselves Hindustani, spelt with an O-E and not a U, and they speak a language that bewildered me when I first heard it on my arrival here in Holland. Enough Hindi for me to recognize it, yet too many other unfamiliar words in there for me to understand it. And it all made sense later when I discovered that the language these Hindustanis were speaking was a descendant not of classical Hindi, but the dialect of Bhojpuri from Bihar, which is where most of the original Indians who were brought to the Dutch colony of Suriname were brought to. When Suriname became independent in 1975, many Indian Surinamese chose to come to the Netherlands, where they formed a vibrant, if slightly self-enclosed, community here.
In Holland, Indians are celebrating their migration from India to Suriname. This year it was 124 years ago that Indians came to Suriname as indentured laborers for the first time in Vida Lala Rook, which is a much greater and more important festival in Holland. I mean, think of the fact that they are 124 years. It's not a number you would, you know, think of any importance. But still, for them, it's as if their roots are a bit in the sea. You know, that their roots are drifting around in the great oceans, coming from the bigger oceans from the east, coming to the Atlantic Ocean in the west. And somewhere in between, they are looking for themselves. And they're trying to get in touch with something that has solidness and so on, but it's not solid and it, you know, it's floating and they have nothing to fall back into.
Anil Ramdas is one of the most high-profile Surinamese Indians in the Netherlands. A prolific radio and television broadcaster and author of several books and newspaper articles, he seemed the most appropriate choice of subject when I was looking for someone who could tell me about the Indian Surinamese community in Holland. Immigrant Indian communities can be found in just about every corner of the world, and what binds them together is a kind of crystallized Indian culture they've taken with them. And the English language, of course, which has become for many of them, including myself, the language they identify with the most. However, the Indians, who are the descendants of the indentured labourers brought to work in Suriname 124 years ago, don't have an affinity with English. Dutch and Bhojpuri are the languages they identify with, and so they are in many ways isolated from their mother culture in India, as well as from many of the other immigrant Indian communities in different parts of the world. I found out the historical reasons for the makeup of the Dutch Hindustanis when I talked with the articulate Mr. Anil Ramdas.
When slavery was abolished, the Dutch believed that the Africans who were, you know, doing all the work would not be prepared to work anymore on the plantations. And they looked at the countries around them in the Caribbean. They looked at the British Guiana, they looked at Trinidad, where the experiment of the British worked by getting indentured laborers from India to these plantations and take over the work of the Africans. So they did the same thing. They made a deal with the British and started to import laborers into Suriname, which was a little different from the way the British did that, because the British, they had experience with the Indians. They knew about the religion, they knew about their backgrounds, they knew about the caste systems and so on. And this is very important. The British always had a very good administration. They really knew where these people came from, what their backgrounds were, what their villages were, where their families were, and they wrote everything down. It was very good documented. While the Dutch, who imported the laborers from India, never knew anything about the Indians and were not interested, wrote down their names wrong, gave them numbers, forgot about asking which village they came from. But on the other hand, the Dutch were much more tolerant towards the behavior of the Indians in Suriname. They only had one restriction. They didn't want any Brahmins in the country, because Brahmins were pundits and pundits were lazy, and lazy people were going to, you know, upset the other laborers, etc., etc. While the British never had that kind of restriction. But on the other hand, the British did never wanted the Indians to speak Hindi or Bhojpuri or whatever. They had to learn to speak English. While in Suriname, the Dutch never had that kind of prohibition. The people were allowed to speak their own languages, and they were allowed to cultivate their own culture even. But that was later. I will come to that later on. But the main difference is now that the Surinamese Indians are much more Indian, much more Bihari, to say so, than, for instance, the Indians in Guyana or Trinidad or wherever. But on the other hand, they had lost their culture, they lost their history much more drastically.
Now, I don't quite understand that, because you're saying that on the one hand they're much more Indian or Bihari than their counterparts in other colonies, mm-hmm. And yet they've lost their culture. You mean they've lost records of their culture?
They didn't lose their culture, I shouldn't say that. They lost their history. Nobody knows anything about their grandfather. Nobody really knows, now for my generation, it's great-grandfather. Nobody really knows where they came from. It's very hard, very difficult to trace back the older stories. So you get an impression of taking a community away, you know, cutting it off from everything it had with India and putting it in a new world where they remain the same in attitudes, in way of building their houses, in way of praying, in the way of talking to each other. I mean, if you travel through certain parts of Suriname, you would swear that you are in Bihar. Everything's the same. The way people holler to each other, the way people walk, the way they, you know, start their meals is very, very much Indian. But they have no idea what connects them with the other world. There are lots of Indians in Suriname who don't even believe that they are not really in India. For them, it was kind of India spreading, India becoming bigger, where they came. So they took India with them.
It's not such a long time ago. It was 125 years ago.
Not even.
How can they not remember who their grandfather is and what village they've come from? Surely it's these things have come down through family history.
Yes, you would expect that. But the people who came down in Suriname were not allowed in the beginning to join into storytelling. Most of them were illiterate. They were not allowed to write. They were not allowed to have plays. There were no cultured and literate people coming with the migration stream. So the kind of laborers in Suriname was different. What they kept is not culture, but lifestyle. So they have the exact lifestyle of India, but without the cultural meaning. I mean, they know exactly what you may do with your left hand and what you may do with your right hand, but they would not know what is the kind of, call it a Vedic explanation for that.
There were no Brahmins.
There were no Brahmins, and if there were Brahmins, then they were never allowed to educate their people or to, you know, to explain things and phenomena. The Brahmins who were there had to keep themselves quiet, because otherwise they would be deported immediately.
Now, Suriname actually is a very complex kind of society, because it's got lots of different cultures. It's got a Black Caribbean culture, it's got Indonesians, Indians, Chinese who are brought into work there, and a sprinkling of white Dutch as well. How much integration was there between the different cultures of Suriname? I mean, Indians in India can be quite racist against darker skins. Mm-hmm. Do you see that still happening in the Indian community in Suriname?
For a long while, the Indian communities were very, very isolated. The country is very, very large. So for Paramaribo, if you wanted to reach the Indian communities, you had to travel for a few days, in the beginning for a week. So this isolation kept them very far from the blacks. Say the blacks were concentrated in Paramaribo, concentrated in the place where the power was, and the Indians were very much in the countryside. And there was a very important period of a governor who came to rule Suriname, a very important figure. His name is Kilstra. And Kilstra hated blacks. He really hated Africans. He thought they were lazy and they were not able to work, they were not producing anything, they were only waiting for government aid, etc. And his idea was to build the Indianness of the Indians and give them a self-awareness, giving them their culture back and stimulating them to become the strong developers of the country. He very much believed in rice and rice cultivation. And he gave the Indians their pandits back. He gave the Indians radio stations. They were able to broadcast in Hindi, which nobody understood because nobody really understood Hindi. They understood Bhojpuri. He gave them their temples back. So he gave the Indians power and kind of introduced the hatred between the Indians and the blacks in a very new way and in a very political way. It was a divide and rule strategy all along, but since then, the tension between Indians and blacks was always there for last half century. The strange thing is that the Indians always trusted the Dutch much more than the blacks did, while the blacks were much more Dutch than the Indians were. The blacks who could speak Dutch very fluently, who knew Western culture, who were actually integrated completely in Western culture, who played piano and sent their children to Moscow to write essays on Dostoevsky, hated the Dutch because the Dutch, you know, hated them. So you have this very strange mixture of political alliances which don't agree with the cultural alliances. And the Indians now, only now, after the 80s, are becoming more westernized, are becoming more Dutch-oriented, and are getting into Western culture slowly.
But the Indian Surinamese culture is changing, growing beyond its history. Despite the cultural alliances and enmities of the past, the young generation especially is creating its own brand of Dutch Caribbean Indian masala. And nowhere is this more apparent than in the kind of music that's coming out of the community now.
Man, I mean, man, everything is everything, man. You see the girl them want everything, you know. When it comes to lyrics, I know how to do it, I know how to chant, I know how to talk with the girl them. All right? Listen. Ball the girl them a ball and the head, ball the guy them a physical fit, ball the girl them a ball and the head. Boy, me tell you me physical fit, I will ram it, me jam it, boy, me tell you love it. Oh, me tell you the girl them so sick, and me tell you me love it badly. Boy, me tell you me now, general.
Que dhaniya hai ra gaili mele mein, koi patwa bata de. Dhaniya hai ra gaili mele mein, koi patwa bata de.
Every immigrant community attempts to define itself by sticking to cultural and religious ties, and the Surinamese Hindustani community in Holland, twice removed from their roots, are trying to find their identity too. But as Anil Ramdas explains, this search for their roots doesn't necessarily bind them with affection to the country their ancestors left behind.
There is a strong generation of Indians now in Holland, for instance, where they came to during independence or right before independence, who are trying to redevelop the Kilstra idea of going back to religion, going back to the holy texts, going back to Indianness, which is something very abstract for most young people. But still, you have to do your prayers and you have to, you know, use your symbols again. And nobody really knows what the symbols stand for. Most of them, it's empty symbols, it's empty rituals, because there is no history to it. There's no continuity from India. So it's the Indians in Holland, now there are 200,000 Indians in Holland from Suriname, have this very strange position where they try to redevelop a kind of Indianness, which is only getting into religion. So you will meet young people who would say, for instance, you have to be a vegetarian, but who would never understand what really is the connotation of that, who would never really explain that in terms of Indian religion, but would explain that in terms of lifestyle. So the Indians who are here are Surinamese Indians, are really New World Indians. They have no idea of India. They dislike Indians from India. They dislike the idea of going back to India or even visiting. They have no nostalgia like that.
Why? Why is that? You said that there's a real renaissance now of people wanting to try and go back to their roots and discover, you know, where they've come from. So why don't they want to go back? Why don't they want to learn from Indians from India?
Yes, I mean, you can count the Indians from Suriname who really go back to India to discover their roots. They don't want to know about the roots because, they don't know about it, and second, they are very much afraid of their roots. They are very much afraid to find a great-great-grand-uncle who is just a crook. Or they are very much afraid to find someone who is not of that kind of standing they think they have. I mean, because the Brahmins were forbidden in Suriname, the caste system disappeared. But what happened is that all the Indians in Suriname feel themselves as Brahmins. There are a lot of Indians now walking around saying that they are Brahmins, because you could make it up. And you could give yourself a new kind of position. You could give yourself a new kind of dignity in the world. And they are very, very much afraid to find out the truth. So they are not interested in that kind of truth anymore. Besides that, it's practically not possible. I mean, where are the documents to find out where your grandparents came from? So for them, it's important not to know about it. But they were connected to India in a different way. They were connected to India through language, because the Bhojpuri and Hindi are still spoken. Not Hindi, really, but Bhojpuri. And they are connected to India first and for all through cinema. So when you see Indians from Suriname going back to India, they will not go to Bihar, where they probably came from. They will not go to Uttar Pradesh to find the villages. They would go to Bombay, and they will go to Juhu, and they will get a picture standing beside Sunil Dutt. That's their most beautiful dream come true.
Well, seeing as we started talking about Hindi movies, tell me about the music they're interested in. You know, is there some kind of delving into Indian classical culture, Indian classical music, and so forth?
Indian music in Suriname, because I told you that no cultured people came along. I mean, the sitar, for instance, was a complete unknown instrument in Suriname. The tabla was a complete unknown instrument in Suriname. Everything that had to do with Indian classical culture, classical tradition, high culture, was not available in Suriname. What they had was the folk kind of music, the baithangan, the dholak, and, you know, the chautal a little during the phagwa seasons. So the real Indian kind of music was very basic, very simple, very undeveloped, and it lost touch with the rest of the community because it couldn't evolve. It couldn't become anything more than the most basic kind of music you only played when you were drunk, or you only heard because someone was getting married. Nobody really liked that kind of music. What they really liked was the Indian music coming from the cinema. So you got a new stream of Indian musicians who imitated Indian songs. You had a Surinamese Mohammed Rafi, you had a Surinamese Mukesh, you had a Surinamese Kishore Kumar, and they really imitated it as best as they could. While in Trinidad, for instance, there were schools for sitar players, and there were scholarships to learn tabla, or there were scholarships to learn Kathak in India. Suriname never really had that. Suriname never even had an Indian ambassador. Suriname never had a cultural council. Suriname never had a cultural connection with India.
Now tell me why, because when we see, for example, the Indian Pakistani community that immigrated to Britain, and they went there to work in the underground, to be museum guards and whatnot, they were a low-educated kind of social group, a part of them. But their children, then their children's children have climbed up, they've got themselves an education, and quite often now the young Asian community in Britain and in the States are university graduates.
This is another very peculiar aspect of Surinamese Indians. I was telling you about Kilstra, who introduced this politics of proudness of your own culture, of your own lifestyle, etc. Well, there was something else Ekilstra found very important, is that the Indians should not get any Western education, because Western education would make them westernized, and then they would become revolutionary people like the blacks in the cities. They would become communists and they would get spoiled. He wanted them to keep them as farmers and as peasants. The peasant culture was preserved. So for a long, long, very long time, Indians in Suriname distrusted Western education, but because they had no other kind of education, they had no education at all. So only in the 50s, the first educated Indians were lower grade teachers who had very, very little education, but were literate enough to teach the children to read and write. When they got their primary school diploma, they call it getuigschrift in Dutch, they were finished with education. And this went on till the 60s. Education was never important for Indians, because in the first place, they distrusted education because they learned to do so. Secondly, they saw that you could, you know, live very comfortably without education in Suriname, because you could get more and more and more land. You could become rich through agriculture. Third, the schools in Suriname were black schools. There were only blacks in those schools, black teachers, or maybe white teachers. They never saw Indians in those settings. So education was something for the blacks. Literature was something for the blacks. Western culture in general was something for the blacks. Only in the 70s and slowly now in the 80s, you see that they get into Western culture, they get into Western education. You could count the academics, the Indian academics who have the age of my father. We know all of them by name. And now you see a new generation of Indians in Holland who are in the universities and who are getting the degrees. But even then, I'm not very happy about that development, because all of them are very, very practical. And Indians are, of course, very pragmatic. So they only do those subjects where you can earn good money from. They are not getting their education to have a worldview, or to become cultured, or to, you know, to be able to think in general. They don't do sociology. They don't do anthropology. They don't do philosophy. They study economics, and they study medicine, and they study accountancy. And so if you talk about education in the broad sense of people who have a world vision, people who think of culture in more general sense, and people who have an idea of high culture and popular culture, etc., you won't really find them amongst Indians in Holland.
It's strange, because what you're describing is almost the exact opposite of what we've seen in a country like South Africa, where Indians were also brought in as laborers, and where they rose to be an educated community who looked down on blacks for being uneducated and illiterate. Mm-hmm. And there's been a conflict between the black and the Indian communities there,
right,
for the exact reverse reasons that you've just described here.
So if you want to really understand Suriname, you should look at it as an exact mirror image of what happened in South Africa. In South Africa, of course, the Indians were a little more white than blacks. The blacks could never become white. While in Suriname, the Dutch who were ruling there, they realized, for instance, that the blacks were the only people who had a kind of national interest. Indians never had any national interest. So Indians in politics would mean Indian politics. Suriname never really had an Indian prime minister, because the Indians were always suspecting, I think it's right, that they never really thought of Suriname as a nation, and they would never have a national attitude of policies that would be important for whole Suriname. They were very much oriented to their own problems, their own economic problems. So if Indians would become powerful in government, they would have only policies aimed at Indians, and not for the nation.
So tell me about the Surinamese Indians in Holland.
Well, one of the most peculiar things is that the Indians in Holland, they are integrating not into Dutch culture, but into black culture, as if they are, you know, integrating into Suriname very slowly. If you look at the music, for instance, the Indians don't like really Western pop music. They don't like American rap songs, but they like merengues, they like sokas. I mean, there is a logic to it. Indian musical groups who are popular now, who make kind of fusion music, they use the patterns of the Latin American Caribbean music, the Black Caribbean music, but they Indianize it somehow. They have this use of the bass guitar, for instance. It's being used as a compensation for having the big Indian drums. So they make a kind of Bhangra music where they don't have any big drums, but they use the bass guitar to reproduce that deep background sound. And they do that very marvelously because it's exciting, but it's nothing Indian and it's nothing Caribbean. It's nothing Western. It's something completely new. And they love it.
There is also a Muslim component to the Indian Surinamese community. How strong are they? And is there a kind of rivalry between them and the Hindu Surinamese?
No, well, in Suriname, there was no rivalry at all. You would see the mosque next to the Hindu mandir, and they would, you know, work together very, very closely because they had a common enemy, which was the blacks. And for instance, there was one Hindu radio station and there was one Muslim radio station. But in the Muslim radio station, you would hear the exact same kind of programs as in a Hindu radio station. You would hear pandits talking to the country, and you would hear the same kind of. But maybe the only way you would find it is that the Muslim radio station would play a little more songs of Mohammed Rafi, and the Hindu radio station a little more of Mukesh. That's the only way it remained. On the other hand, you would even see that the rituals, they would get closer to each other. Muslims, for instance, adopted Hindu rituals. They have this ceremony of when a baby is born, they cut off the hair. Normally, Muslims would put that in a piece of paper and bury it. But in Muslims in Suriname would throw it into water, like the Hindus did. So the rituals became very much alike.
Indian Surinamese, Muslim and a Hindu intermarriage, would that be completely accepted?
Not completely. We shouldn't exaggerate the tolerance between the two, but it would be a less great problem than when the Muslim girl or the Hindu girl would come back with a black boy.
Or a white one?
Or a white one. Although I would say that the hierarchy would be for a Hindu girl, for instance, that she should come home with a Hindu boy or else with a Muslim boy from a Hindustani background, or else with a white boy, and then last place, if it's a black boy, the family is in disaster.
There's so many contradictions, though, because you've just spent a lot of time telling me how much closer they're becoming now to the Black Surinamese community here. Mm-hmm. So culturally, musically, artistically, they're becoming closer to them, and yet when it comes to marriage, they still don't want to mix that way.
Yes, but it is not that strange. You see it all over in cultures, all over the world. Freud called it the narcissism of the small difference. The moment the differences are becoming smaller, the narcissism of that one last element of difference is becoming very important. I mean, you see it in Bosnia, you see it in Rwanda, where people really look like each other. They start to hate each other because that one elementary difference would become a huge kind of wall between them. And the last wall between Indians and blacks is, of course, sexual, and is marriage. The Indians in Holland would eat and drink and talk and dance like the blacks. But the more they look and think like the blacks, the less they would, you know, be prepared to accept that one last step. That one last step is the impossible step.
Do you feel that Indians here are, or Indian Surinamese are subjected to a kind of racism from the other Dutch communities, whether they be white or black or yellow or whatever?
Well, here we get back to the South Africa story. I think that Indians are much less subjected to racism than, for instance, the blacks, and then, for instance, the Moroccan and Turkish people, Mediterranean people. The Mediterranean people have a disadvantage that they don't speak the language, and the blacks have the disadvantage that they don't have the right skin color. While Indians, they always have trusted the Dutch, and they are always, they have a kind of natural way of getting along with the Dutch.
You've been listening to Anil Ramdas talking about the Indian Surinamese community in Holland. And that's just about all we have time for this week. My thanks to technician Alex Van Horn. I'm Dira Sujan, saying tot ziens, bye sal.